Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Series 3. It's Alex Petrovic here and I'm here with my co-host Joe Foster.
Buongiorno.
Before we begin Series 3, we have some news. Unfortunately, our beloved producer Al can no longer produce for us. Don't worry, he's not dead. He's just very, very busy. Isn't that right, Joe?
He's a liar. He's a beautiful liar. Anyway.
But never you fear, faithful listeners. We've been searching far and wide. The search has taken us to places we didn't even know were possible. There's been obstacle courses. And we found you, a new producer. And we'd like to introduce you to her now. Jade Gebby.
Hi.
She sounds delighted.
I am so delighted to be here. Thank you, guys. I am so proud and so excited.
How did you feel when you found out the news?
I got a banner. I tied it across a bridge on a motorway to announce it to everyone.
Like you were outing us as police informers.
Exactly.
Jade is wearing a dressing gown, so it's nice to know she's taking the job seriously from the off.
I work in comfort, what can I say?
Welcome to the podcast, Jade. And we would also like to say thank you very much, Producer Al, for everything you have done for us. You have taught us so much, and for that we are eternally grateful. And to you, listeners, thank you for tuning in again. We will do our utmost to keep you entertained through the forthcoming series. Goodbye. Hello and welcome to Series 3, Episode 1 of This Thing On. I'm Alex Petrovic and I'm here with my co-host Joe Foster.
Hello.
Producer Jade.
Hi.
And our fantastic guest this month, Brody Snook.
Hello.
How are you, Brody?
I'm well, how are you? Apart from your hay fever.
Well, let's just dive
Ailment
straight
number
in.
Number one. Let's get it in. Check.
Dot point number one on the piece of paper. Alex's weeping eyes.
My teary eyes of doom.
I didn't know that you'd be the kind of person to get hay fever, but now that you do get hay fever, it's
sense.
Absolute perfection, isn't it?
I thought you knew. Well, isn't it just easier to assume I have it?
I reckon you've got hay fever. I reckon you've got a bad Achilles tendon.
I do. I've got actually a sore.
I bet you fucking do.
I've got a really sore right Achilles at the moment.
Yeah. Really?
The thing like is, Nostradamus.
The thing is, I wouldn't even know what that was. I'd be like, no, just fucking walk it off. But Alex,
worse than four,
I think
right?
That makes it worse. Yeah. Have you ever worn one of those like beige coloured stretchy bandage things over your knee? I can imagine you doing that as well, but with like sports gear.
I don't think I've had a stretchy bandage. What am I jegging?
Is this the worst of Alex? Right?
Yeah, we haven't actually named it yet.
Alex is someone who will really miss the NHS because he's made the most out of it. Like, more than any other person.
I'm massively pro-NHS.
Yeah, I bet you are.
Yeah.
You're a hay fever sufferer as well.
I am a hay fever sufferer, yeah. As I just said before we started recording, I've just necked 3 antihistamines, hoping that it makes it go away, and I'm now drinking white wine, so.
Antihistamine famously goes well with white wine.
It really does. I did a gig, actually, I think it was probably last spring then, if that was the same thing. And I had an antihistamine and then I had a pint of Guinness. And I was closing this gig at the Carolyn. And I went on stage and I was like, I can't speak. Like, it was so... I didn't realise it was going to do that. But yeah, I went on and was meant to do about 15 minutes. So I got like 12 in, just being like, I don't know what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Felt like 12 in, you were on stage for 40 minutes just tripping on antihistamine
just
and Guinness.
I mean, you know, as usual, there was about 8 people there, about 6 of them were comics, so it didn't really matter a lot.
For a comedy gig, though, being unable to speak
it's
is
bad.
A toughie.
Yeah, it's not the one.
I've only had it through drink. I think I've spoken about this.
You have, yeah. I've heard you talk about this. Like, even having one drink before going on stage makes you just that little bit behind the 8 ball, which I do get.
Have you ever had really bad dry mouth on stage?
Oh, yeah. And then you kind of click into the microphone, you're like...
Yeah.
sounds like a... It's hard to tell what's actually happened and what I've dreamt in, like, nightmares.
No, really, Alex has nightmares every night.
Really enjoying comedy at the moment, guys. But it sounds like a whistling sound on the top of the mic.
Yeah, and... it is. It's not nice. I think even as a comic, when you're in the audience, you can really hear if someone's got the dry mouth.
Yeah.
Speaking of the NHS, I found out the other day, because I'm in the process, well, I'm about a year out for having to renew my current visa, mm-hmm. right? And I sort of, because it costs so much money, so I sort of was looking into it the other day and kind of going through the admin of it and stuff. And they've actually added, I'm on an ancestral visa, right? So all you have to do every 5 years is renew it. And you sort of have to reprove your ancestry and send off, you know, like I've got to get my nan's original birth certificate and my dad's and mine and my passport and send it all off to the Home Office with a huge fee and then just panic for 6 weeks. But I read the other day that Theresa May last April actually introduced a healthcare surcharge, basically, which is the use of the NHS for non-UK residents. And it's £1,000.
Wow.
Yeah, which is on top of essentially the £1,000 you've already got to pay.
I mean, I know that I'm being a real pernickety dick.
Go on then,
for how long does that £1,000 cover you? I'd want a bit of weight behind that. I want like a 10-year...
5-year membership.
Well, it's 5 years, because again, you know, when you have to then renew the visa in another 5 years, it's another healthcare surcharge.
So how much
so
is
it's
that?
Built into the cost of the
you're
renewal.
I know it's terrible. How much is that a year?
You're going to want to get your money's worth
it's
as
mad,
well.
It's mad, isn't it? Well, this is the thing. I'm like, I reckon, and I've lived here for 8 years. I reckon in the last 8 years, I've had like some stitches and two UTIs, and I reckon that's probably like what? $100.
You need to go for more stuff.
I mean,
Alex
me
can help
stairs.
You.
Well, I'm in profit at the moment. Yeah.
Can you tell me more
when
about
he goes,
how
when he goes to A&E, they give him a menu.
I wish that wasn't true. Yeah. And you're suffering on the old jet lag at the moment as well.
Well, I was, yeah. When I flew back from Australia doing Fringe over there about a month ago, and then flew straight back in here, and then went home, packed a bag, went straight back to the airport, and went out to Switzerland to do some gigs, which was a brilliant experience. But I was, yeah, just jet lagged out of this world. And it kind of like, it's one of those things, I don't know how much jet lag you've experienced, but it's like a combination of being hungover and just like a little bit high or something. So I look backing on like those gigs now, which were a month ago, and I don't really remember much of it at all.
It's a really, because I just came back from America, it's a really surreal experience. Like, I was in a car with two other comics driving back from a gig like 3 days after I got back from America, and one of them just snapped me out of it and said, are you all right? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And like, you've just been staring blankly for like 30 minutes, just like, my
well,
eyes.
Maybe did you? Who, it depends who the comedians were. Were they really boring?
No. They were both good friends. They were very entertaining.
Being that tired and kind of out of sorts also adds like a level of anxiety to your situation, because you just you feel a bit out of it.
How did you feel before doing the gig
in Switzerland?
Yeah, with the jet lag and stuff. Did you feel like?
The first one was hard because I flew straight into Geneva, got picked up at the airport, went straight to the venue, had about an hour before the show. And
that sounds absolutely fucking horrible. Like, it sounds like...
I mean, if I had been here and just living my life, you know, in the UK is normal and that was the case, like, you'd be a bit tired or whatever, but you'd get on with it.
I'd
literally just done a 24-hour flight from being out in Australia for Fringe, so... It was hard, and I will not ever listen back to that recording, but it was, I mean, it's a good experience, a really good test of professionalism, especially if you're going to be an international comic, to do gigs where you just feel like absolute ratchet.
Mm. How were the gigs, generally?
They were really good. So we had four gigs, we did Geneva, Basel, Lausanne, and Zurich, and they were 4 days in a row,
nice.
Which were good. They sort of got better toward the end.
And they were all in good rooms, not weird rooms?
Yeah, they were good rooms. They were sort of a mix. One was like an auditorium
all
type.
Full, more importantly?
Fuck no. No. I mean, Switzerland seems to have the same problem as the Carolyn Brunswick. Filling those rooms. But, I mean, they were great. They were really good crowds. And it was a good kind of test to sort of be gigging to a plethora of different people.
Mm.
So you had, like, the expat population was a bit higher in some places than others.
Mm.
And so,
did you find that
that
affected things differently in different places? Or
It could do, yeah. I mean, there were certain things like that didn't land as hard as they would on other nights, like, you know, stuff that doesn't really appertain to...
Did you have to die? Because I imagine that you'd have to. I don't think if I cut everything up and said, right, you've got to do this now to an audience from in Switzerland.
Yeah.
How much of your stuff would actually work? Mm. And I think I'd be working on quite a low.
Mm.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like I'm not Mr. English or Mr. British. But if you think about that, like, how much... It's like, can I do the Louis Theroux thing?
Mm.
Mm.
Can I do the narrowboat thing?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, they probably...
I mean, yeah, in the places with the, you know, high expat population, there are a lot of Brits at the Geneva gig. So I did my joke about, like, being hungover and wandering around the co-op holding a pepperami.
Mm.
And that was, like... That got enough laughs for me to kind of go, oh, okay, that was worth doing.
Mm.
But it pushed me into doing some crowd work, actually, which I don't love. But that was quite good, especially with the lower audiences.
Mm.
I think that can become really, really fun to the point where you just go, why am I writing all this material?
Yeah.
Whereas if you throw yourself into, like, something where you go, like... I'm not going to do any material today, which is a risky and really bad
idea. Speaking of nightmares,
idea.
Mate, that is my worst nightmare. Not being,
have you woke
not
up?
Being nerdily prepared to go on stage.
Would you ever do it? As like a test?
I mean, I would, because I should, because it's obviously going to be a good test and it's going to make you better, if not scared into being better. So, yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. No, I wouldn't. I'm saying that to make myself sound like a better comic, but no, not at all.
I don't even MC.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I fucking hate MCing.
I love it.
Do you?
I think it's great. I used to hate it.
But this, don't take this the wrong way. I feel like you don't have the right persona to MC, but when you do, it works. Whereas I know that I don't, and I get on stage and I'm just kind of like, how can I do this at kind of a low energy, authentic level, rather than, you know, kind of fake enthusiasm.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know,
it's
talk to people about their jobs and shit. Like, you know, I don't care about that. But when you MC, you really seem to make that work. And that's always intrigued me because I can't do it.
Thank you very much. Next section.
We've shut the door on everything that's happened. Tied
it in a nice
the thing is, I used to do is cut everything down material into sections, and then I was just like, oh, just stop being weird and see what happens. But the thing is, it's not that easy. I still do have to die for, you know, sometimes I'll go on and I'll go, oh, they do not like me, and that is still as bad. But I think
you call that though, and that's like what then warms the room up because it's acknowledgement.
Mm.
I think your MC is quite material heavy though, isn't it? As well,
I will do material.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, if I'm doing material, it's because I'm not necessarily worried, but also I'm worried about if you're doing it for someone else or someone else is about to come on.
Because
people get really shitty. I've had people get really shitty with me about that.
Yeah.
And people get shitty with you as an MC way more often than they would do any other time.
Mm.
The only person who will get, even if you died in the worst way, the only person who's going to get shitty with you about that is a dickhead, basically, because you've been booked for that amount of time.
Mm.
And if they've booked you for that amount of time, it's their fault for booking you and not, like, you know, not knowing what you're about. Or sometimes, but the thing is, there's all these sort of weird things that everyone's supposed to know, and you know, you can always turn a room around, and most of the time you can, but sometimes you just can't.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that all too well.
Yeah.
I'm going to Edinburgh, you're going to Edinburgh next year.
Mm-hmm.
We're both doing the Warren in Brighton.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone who listens to this podcast needs to say any more about Brighton.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So what's it like, Fringes in Australia? Is there a situation where, is there the same situation at the Edinburgh Fringe where there's two people fighting against each other? Because the thing is, like, look, and then there's other people who want to charge you £30,000. Like, is it a similar thing? Can you get a paid venue? Is it better value?
I think you can do a mixture of things. So when I went out, I was a bit stressed actually, because initially, so basically the EOIs for Perth Fringe, which is the one that I did, open up in about June, July for the festival that happens over January and February. And I knew I wanted to do a show, and I really struggled to find the venue. And it was sort of like a last minute thing where I got offered, I actually didn't apply for it initially, because it's like my favorite comedy venue in the whole city. And I sort of went, it's got like 94 capacity, you know, it's not, I'm probably not big enough for them to be interested, all that sort of stuff. So I actually almost didn't bother until I was desperate for a venue sort of towards the end of the EOI period. So I then applied for that and got it, which was fantastic.
That's
so basically
amazing.
Yeah, I was so stoked, because it is the undoubtedly the best and longest running comedy room in Perth.
Mm.
And yeah, just a really good kind of a good history, and sort of, you know, loads of great people have played there. And I mean, Perth's still a relatively small you know, place that doesn't have a lot of exposure to comedy, I suppose, as far as, you know, the places that we know, you know. So yeah, I was really stoked to have gotten that venue. So basically what worked with that is that it was a fee for the room hire, and basically you do all of your own promo. So you can send them a couple of posters and stuff, and they put them up around the venue, and they'll, you know, have your flyers.
But that all in no way?
No, not particularly. So basically, yeah, it's not, but then there are free fringe venues that you can do, but some of that comes along with the same terms as you don't go in the guide and stuff like that. So,
no, really? Because
yeah,
that's not a big thing here, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So, but, I mean, and they do have an app, so I think you can basically, if you do free fringe, you won't go in the guide, but you will end up on the app. So,
okay.
Which I think, you know,
most, more people, are,
yeah,
well, then again, you're...
There is a strong argument that paper is dead, so...
Yeah, and also the... low term that I heard in a call centre job probably about 10 years ago is affluent greys.
Ooh.
Which is old people with a bit of money to spend.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware. And they're like, let's just get the brochure.
Mm, and take a punt.
But
yeah,
everyone else is getting the app.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was Perth, you know, we are, I mean, Australia in itself is like quite a rich country, but the economy is in a downswing at the moment. And WA, which is where Perth is the capital of, is fairly fairly rich as well, I suppose you could say. There's a very high level of disposable income because of the mining boom. So people are really a lot more likely to drop $50 on two tickets to something they've never heard of, which is great. But in the years gone by, it's been more so, but this year in particular, speaking to a lot of the other artists, everyone really kind of struggled with their ticket sales. So I was very happy with my run. I think the least I had in was about 35 and the most I had in was 70.
Nice.
That's good.
Which is good. Obviously, it makes a lot of sense for me to go all the way out there, because that's where I'm from. So, you know, you've got roots there and a fairly decent chance of shifting tickets.
How many nights did you do there? The whole run or?
Yeah. So what they do is, it's a little bit like Brighton, where it depends on which venue you get as to what you get offered, whether or not you've got an exclusivity contract like I did. So I actually only got to do 4 nights. And in my contract was that that's on the basis of you not being able to do your show at any other venue during the Fringe, which I was a little bit gutted about, because I wanted to do more nights.
So they will control. And do people get fucked over if they do the other thing? They go and do a show somewhere else?
I think so. Like a friend of mine, he did, he basically did the whole month with the same show, but he was spread over like 3 different venues. And obviously, depending on how their dates work, it's not like you do a week here, a week here, and a week here. He was doing like 4 nights at one, 3 nights at another one, back to the original venue to do another couple of nights, then to the third one. So I feel like the lack of sort of continuity within that kind of setup might affect how you shift your tickets. Because, I mean, even looking at something as simple as a poster, kind of going 21st to the 28th at this venue, and then from the 30th to the 1st at this venue, and I feel it does look a little bit complex. So I think, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
your posters are going
to
be a
maybe
real
that's
pain
just
in
something
the ass
that's
to read
like,
as well.
That's just something that initially meets the eye that I look at and I'm like, oh, it just looks a bit messy. But again, you know, if someone's
just
gonna,
smoother.
Yeah, if someone's going to come and see your show, they're going to come and see your show, aren't they? So.
Yeah.
Just depends. Just be good. Just
be
great.
Put the effort in and do the research. Of...
Exactly. Just don't be shit at comedy.
Do you think it's one of those festivals? I'm aware that, you know, this is, you know, for a lot of people, they'll be like, but when are they going to talk about the shit they usually talk about, which is nothing? But like,
Speaking of no continuity.
Exactly.
Welcome.
But like, so do you think the more than other festivals, because everyone goes, I hear a lot of interviews where people go, you know, you can really just get on a run in Edinburgh and then you turn up and the room's full and, you know, you're getting all this good press.
Like it just happens.
Like
yeah,
it just
sure.
happens by accident and you don't pay thousands of pounds for it.
I would love an accident.
Could, do you reckon you could do that? Is that achievable there or more achievable than somewhere else?
I don't really know, actually. I know a couple of years ago I went out. I think I was doing my first year that I did Perth Fringe, I did a triple header. And I think at that same year, Joey Page came over from
yeah.
here. And he did it in such a way. I can't remember if it was like a last minute kind of thing or something like that, but he basically did it in such a way that he wasn't in the venue. Sorry, wasn't in the guide because he had like a venue that wasn't actually Fringe listed.
Yeah.
And he had a fantastic run.
Mm.
I think he obviously just hit the pavement and flyered the hell out of it and really hustled. But yeah, from what I, because I hung out with him quite a lot that Fringe, and I think he was just kind of like, yeah, man, it didn't really make
a
difference.
I can imagine he's a good flyer as well.
Yeah, he's got the charm, doesn't he, Joey Page? So.
Self-promo kind of.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking to someone about some kind of paid venue in some kind of Scottish location, and they were saying that they had paid for a venue, and I was thinking of paying for a venue, and then I got like quite a good free venue, Moriarty's Bar at 4 fucking hell, I should even memorise my own plugs, 4:45, which is nice for me, you know. But
I've got a question for you.
Sure.
Because I was talking to Joe about this quite recently in terms of self promotion as a comic. How does it make you feel? Because I it makes me feel, because it's going to become such a crucial part of it, but it just makes me feel so
it's the opposite of my personality.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Fighting against it.
It's funny, like we were talking about the MC personality. Something that I really lack is a flyering personality.
Yeah.
And when Dave Fensom and I did our split bill last year when we did Paranoid for Brighton Fringe, we just kind of like, we're just walking around holding stacks of flyers, just looking at each other across the Warren being like, don't give a fuck, mate. Like, just we really lacked that enthusiasm to be like, hey guys, what are you up to tonight? If you fancy seeing some comedy, it's free. You know, just all that sort of stuff. Like, really, that just gives me that. Yeah, makes my soul itch.
Yeah.
But I really do enjoy online self promotion. I think obviously it's a necessary evil, and you know that to shift tickets and have people interested and be making people laugh online, you have to dedicate yourself to doing that. So I think like, it was that sort of point where I started doing things that were ticketed, or, you know, wanting people to come and see me, or wanting, you know, a bit of a reputation or whatever, that it was a bit like, I'm just going to have to get on board with this. And I think it's really, it's so important to make it funny, or at least amusing.
That's the thing I've tried to find.
At least amusing. And I mean, like, even if it's a Facebook post and you're sharing an event for a gig you're doing or something, just like, just put a bit of personality in it rather than just being like, doing this tonight.
Yeah.
So my favourite thing is probably like Instagram stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because it's sort of, and it's becoming more and more popular. Well, I mean, arguably it's old hat now because everyone does it. But to do promo stuff, because, you know, obviously it is, they're temporary kind of things. So it's a little bit like the Snapchat setup where it disappears. But, you know, you can post a video on it and that lasts 15 seconds. And I think the idea of doing promo where it's not, you're not kind of suffocating people with it or pushing the point too much. You're posting something that's going to be funny. It lasts 15 seconds and then it disappears.
Yeah.
So you almost kind of want to leave people wanting a little bit more.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy that because it's sort of, you know, I'll try and post something on Instagram, like do Instagram something funny once a day maybe. And whether that's just, you know, a dumb picture or some self-promotion or even doing things like posting a lineup, like when I'm at the 99 Club or something, because, you know, agents and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do think it's really important. It is a bit of a nause, and sometimes you'll just kind of go, fuck, I've got nothing to say today and nothing to make funny, because sometimes, you, obviously, as you guys know, you just don't feel funny all the time. But I do, it is a joy of mine in a way. But at the same time, it is a necessary evil because, you know, obviously you've got to kind of be in it to win it and be visible, but not too visible that people get sick of you.
Finding a
James Corden.
Yeah.
healthy balance.
Healthy balance. And again, you know, making sure it's funny or people, or it's,
that's the thing,
know,
is like that sort of
it's your shop front, I think, and that's the best way that I think about it, is that anything you've got online is your shop front for your brand.
Mm.
And I think, you know, if you want it to be in your shop front, it's got to look a certain way. It's got to kind of represent your sense of humour or your attitude or whatever. So, yeah.
Right, it's time for our first feature, which is Plot That About. Plot, batter, 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 plot, that about. Right, so this is a delightfully fun game.
Okay.
Where I give you and Joe a separate film title each.
Mm-hmm.
These are real film titles, but you've got to tell me what you think the film's about and who is in this film, and feel free to elaborate as much as possible.
Okay, you guys both know about me that I've never seen any films. So
perfect.
This could be,
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
That if anything, that works better.
All right.
So Joe, as our resident person, is
I've
gonna
never won this.
Joe is our resident person. What a proud title.
I've got a
it's the nicest thing I've ever said to him. And then Jade will decide which of
the
two films
is
the
winner,
that
sure.
she would like to most see. So Joe will go first.
Okay.
Joe has also, fun fact, never won this game.
Okay.
Right. Two delightful films for you. Joe, your film, Night Shift.
Well, actually, that's not as bad as the rest of them.
Because it's got two words.
Yeah, because it's got two words.
I normally give Joe one word films.
Normally,
right,
I'll be like,
okay.
Your film is...
It's about an animal or something.
Night Shift. Okay, it's about two knights. One of them is played by George Harrison, and the other one is played by Ainsley Harriott.
George Harrison, as in
the Beatles. The dead Beatle.
Okay.
I did a sign of the cross there.
You did a hand gesture that only we could see.
Yeah. It was a sign of the cross. God love you, George. I don't know why I'm being so affectionate. Right. So they are guarding the Palace of Yore. Is that right?
Yeah, that's probably
about right.
I mean, I'm sure it's a palace somewhere.
So it's
hey,
a palace,
it's your film.
It's a palace of yore, but it's like basically like a sort of big sand castle, right? And they're on the night shift, and an ogre played by John Goodman attacks the castle and starts sort of burrowing out the bottom with like his bare hands,
yeah.
And like trying to take down their thing. And Ainsley Harriott has a crossbow that was given to him by his father. And there's a flashback.
Who's his father?
His father is played by... his father is played by... who's his father played by? His father is played by Onslow from Keeping Up Appearances from the 90s. From the 90s, and he's wearing the string vest and the trucker hat.
Yeah.
And he says, Ainsley! I don't know what his voice is, because it's been so long since I've seen that show. But he goes, Ainsley, when you need to use this, you'll know. And
why are you doing Jon Snow?
Jon Snow? Who's Jon Snow?
Game of Thrones.
Oh, Jon Snow I know is the legend from Channel 4. Who, by coincidence, plays the king in this film. So basically, he hands him this arrow, and he says, when you need to use it, you'll know. And then Ainsley Harriott and John Goodman still like, because he's got big hands, so he's getting a lot done. Do you know what I mean? He's not fucking around.
It's a lot of digging.
He's getting out of breath, granted. But when he is hammering it, you know that's what's going on. So he's doing quite a good job. I mean, which does beg the question why they built a castle out of sand. But I'm not here to answer that question. So Ainsley Harriott fires up his longbow or crossbow, whichever one I said. It was the longbow, I think. The one that's like a gun. But he's like the angle's too intense, so he can't like, because you can't like shoot down. Like John Goodman's like a big guy, but he's on like a turret. So he goes, if he turns to the other guy who is played by, who was the other guy played by? It was Ainsley Harriott and...
George Harrison.
George Harrison, yes.
Sorry. He turns to George Harrison and goes, I can't get him from here. And George Harrison says, well, how are we going to save the world then?
And, is that Liverpudlian?
Sort of. There's but they all are. They're not.
He's off his face on Novocaine.
But that's none of your business. So George had quite a dark period in the later period of his life. But he also decided to do this film just for the fun. So he said, how are we going to know when we can get him, Ainsley's character's name? And so Ainsley goes, don't worry, what we'll do is we'll... He's actually standing on a bridge made of flapjack. Okay, John wow. Goodman is standing on a bridge.
So he's dug out now, and he's...
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no, so he was always on the bridge made of flapjack because he's on the bridge made of flapjack to the castle made of sand. Yes. That's unbelievable. I can't help you. So what they do is they get a big, you know, in the old days when they used to pour like a water thing, full of lava or whatever down on the people below.
Like a pulley system.
No, no, no. What are you talking about? Portcullis from a castle, and then above the portcullis they've got like a thing they pour hot water down on intruders and stuff like that. So they fill this thing with tea, the flapjack's natural enemy.
Yeah.
Okay. And they pour it down on the bridge made of flapjack. It crumbles and John Goodman falls to his death. And then as John Goodman falls to his death, he goes, no! And as he does that, the sun comes up over the horizon, and it's the end of the night shift. I've gone back to the title.
Oh, you want to win, don't you?
I have done this 9 times.
I feel like I need to pause that film.
Wow, he's going for the... Fucking he's hell. Going for...
Sorry, guys. I'm going to need to vape. Just in case anyone's wondering.
Is that like your cigarette after sex? Jesus, that was some hard work.
Wow. We'll reveal what the films were afterwards.
Sure.
Brody.
Okay.
Your film, 8 Crazy Nights.
Right, it's the sequel to Night Shift.
Good start,
yeah. 8 Crazy Nights. Okay, so this time it's set in Australia. And George Harrison and John Goodman are joined by...
Is Ainsley Harriott not in it? He was too big.
Didn't he die? Oh, no, wait, that was John Goodman.
John Goodman died.
Like, I had to die now. Come back. Went off too long. All right, so we got Ainsley Harriott. Is he the couscous guy?
He's a chef.
I can see how he'd be in a Hollywood film. All right, so we got Ainsley Harriott. We got George Harrison. This is obviously made in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Who else would be a good knight? We've got Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yep.
We've got a female knight, because that's very important to me, who is played by Rosie O'Donnell. How many is that? We got four.
Four, we got four.
Okay. We've got Steve Martin.
Yep.
Nice.
We've got... Who else is realistic?
What do you get think bonus points for realism.
What do you think the budget of this sequel would be?
Is it straight to DVD, or is this like a... Are you going Blockbuster?
I would say, straight to DVD or... VHS.
Straight to DVD, but surprisingly high budget for straight to DVD.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Steve Martin and Cuba Gooding Jr. in there.
Yeah,
true. Are they like A-list?
Yeah, I'd say so. Ooh, Martin Short, because you cannot have a film with Steve Martin without Martin Short, right?
Yep.
Especially in the
80s. There you go.
And I want another woman, so I'm going to say the... Oh, no, wait, we've still got two.
Who's
to
been
go.
In the 80s?
Who's been in the 80s? Another Rosie O'Donnell.
Rosie O'Donnell's twin.
Yeah. They do that with like some green screen.
Only booked one so woman, but they've green screened it to make it look like they've booked
do
more.
You know what? There was only one woman working in films in the 80s, so they've had to just double her. So we got Rosie O'Donnell 2.0. And we've got, who can be the 8th knight? This is collaborative now, guys. You've got to pitch in.
Sanjay from EastEnders.
I think Gary Busey.
Gary Busey, is he a footballer?
I'm just thinking. No, he's a crazy 80s actor.
Gary Lineker. We've got the couscous guy, we need the crisp guy. Alright, yeah, Gary Busey. Is he the one that...
He's the one with like the crazy hair.
Yeah, he was in Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew. Alright, so they're the eight knights, none of whom I can remember, apart from two Rosie O'Donnells.
You will be marked on it at the end.
Yeah. I'm already losing. Okay, Eight Crazy Nights. So basically, it's a sequel to Night Shift, but what's happened is that they are all in a mental asylum because of their work as knights. So basically, it's like when you leave the FBI and you've got to get some kind of PTSD counselling.
Yep.
Except they've basically all had to go into this secret mental asylum because no one can know that they used to be knights. Because, in fact, Joe didn't touch on this in Night Shift, but they were all actually worked undercover.
Wow.
And they had, like, admin jobs during the day.
I think Joe should lose points for not covering that.
And basically, John Goodman knew about this. And there's a really good cameo by Dr. Drew... just because he knows all of them from real life. Gary Busey dies. I can't disclose how because it's spoilers. We'll come to spoilers, I think. And basically, it's one of those films where as it goes on, you're like, they're all going to get better. They're all going to make it out of the mental asylum. They're all going to sort of come to terms with the fact, you know, that they used to be knights. They can't do it anymore because they're all old as shit, so they're retired now. Both Rosies are just so knackered. But you think it's one of those films that you think at the 40, 50 kind of minute mark, you're like, this is going to come good. I can see a light at the end of the tunnel for them. And then there's a fire at the mental asylum.
Who started it?
Gary Busey.
Of course. Do you know what? He really fits into this story. The more and more you're talking about, I'm going, yeah, that's exactly what he did.
That's such a Gary Busey thing to do.
Isn't it? And, okay, well, Steve Martin and Martin Short escape because they're doing a tour this year. And just got to be realistic, doesn't it, guys?
Absolutely.
And the end credits roll with some songs by George Harrison.
Any particular song?
My Sweet Lord.
sounds fitting.
Yeah. Sounds pretty nighty.
Yeah, yeah. But Gary Busey, like the last scene is Gary Busey like walking away from the explosion
with like a
into the camera.
I'm picturing him like in like some sort of white lab coat, but it's like charred bits.
Yeah,
of...
and he's got like sort of crazy kind of hair blowing about.
Yeah.
I did say he died at the end, but let's just assume he killed himself.
This is sort of like pre.
It'd be a very Gary thing to do, you know.
Just so unpredictable.
It really is. And basically the victim of the whole thing is Dr. Drew because he's, you know,
he's
taken
so
time off his celebrity rehab to work with these people, these former knights. And Eight Crazy Nights for you.
Wow.
You know when you watch a film and it hits you so hard that you feel like you're in it and you're like, oh my God, like, I've been through all this stuff. I feel like that now.
Did it all get a bit too real?
It got too real, yeah. I just... that. Gary
and
Busey.
Also,
Gary Busey. Yeah. I got possessed by Gary
Busey. I'm going to dream about him too.
And it could be a trilogy. But, well, you know.
Do you know what? Funnily enough,
fuck it.
When I picked the two films, didn't even notice they both had the word knights in them. So, good spot, guys.
Did
good
you
spot.
Not? Did you not?
No, that was.
Oh, and at some point, Eight Crazy Nights, there's like a scene where it's a positive montage where they're all maybe like.
Uplifting,
like maybe packing their bags. To like to go to the mental asylum and they're like, yeah, we're gonna get straight, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. But it's a motivational one, and Crazy Nights by Kiss plays. Yeah,
I was thinking Wham, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go.
So that is over to Jade now to decide,
right,
which of those two films, if they were in the cinema, which one are you going to get a ticket for first,
and how high are they rated on Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, I mean, I would see, because I would have to see them in order to understand them.
Very true.
So logically, I would get a ticket to Joe's first, but then I would be thinking, oh, sequel, is it going to be as good? And it blew me out of the water, the sequel. Joe's one was brilliant. Although
always the bridesmaid.
I also have a secret as well. I have actually seen Eight Crazy Nights, the real one.
Oh, amazing.
The reason as well that I'll pick Brody's one is because
I know how shit the real one is, and I would much rather have seen that film than the one that I did see.
Also, two Rosie O'Donnells.
Exactly.
Think of how
I mean,
much hijinks.
It was more diverse. It had not one, but two. Okay, the same woman, but there were two women in it.
Exactly.
No women in it.
I'm all about diversity, so
exactly.
You know.
Across both films, there was two women and it was the same woman.
Although I do have to say choosing A.Z. Harriet was good, because I do like his couscous.
Mm. Thanks. I suppose that's all I can take away from this exercise.
Pretty much. And also, I think you never expect the sequel to outdo the first film, do you? So.
And that's why it was just so mind-blowing.
Yeah.
T2. Terminator 2. The Curse of the Terminators. That's what's happened here.
Austin Powers 2.
Austin Powers 2, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
I think that's the best
one. I don't know whether you're right, actually, about that. I think maybe the first one outdoes them.
I regret opening that can of worms. It's a question for another time.
Yeah.
That's
even
a long, that's
even
a
the theme song. Madonna, come on.
Beautiful Stranger.
Yeah.
Fucking what a tune.
What a tune.
That was her, like, country and western sort of phase, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Really good.
I think the second one's got Burt Bacharach, but...
No, the first one has Burt Bacharach.
Right. Night Shift first. This is the plot as of Wikipedia.
All right.
Chuck, played by Henry Winkler, aka the Fonz, has given up life as a stockbroker because it was too stressful.
This
is Night Shift, yeah. Chuck has given up life as
a
stockbroker.
It's much shitter than the
because it was too stressful. Now he works an easy gig as a night shift attendant at a New York City morgue. His co-worker, Bill Blazurkowski, Michael Keaton, is always looking to make a quick buck.
Michael Keaton?
Yeah?
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's like you're surprised it's not the plot to yours. Hang on.
They don't even know it. No flapjack.
When's
going to
say Ainsley Harriet? His colleague is always looking to make a quick buck. When Bill finds out that his neighbour, his prostitute neighbour, Belinda, needs a place to work, they convince...
Wait. Who plays Belinda?
Shelley Long?
Bloody Shelley Long.
Should we have a look at Shelley Long just so we know?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll know her?
Not for
any other reason. That might be weird. Let's have a look at Shelley Long.
So the night
I just try to scroll on that, but it's actually a photo of it.
Oh. So the night shift thing basically comes from them working at this morgue.
Yeah.
What year was it released?
That is not on the screenshot of the plot that I took.
Shelley Long, I recognise.
Let's have a look.
Oh, she's so handy for a podcast.
She's in...
Brady Bunch.
Yeah, I think she is.
Is she
also
in Cheers?
Yeah.
Maybe she is in Cheers.
Again, there were only three women working in the 80s, so highly likely.
So, yeah, so Night Shift is about... two guys that turn a morgue into a brothel.
That's really fucking weird, isn't it?
Is it a comedy?
Couldn't do that today.
I'm gonna go. It's directed by Ron Howard.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Mm.
I would have. That's the answer if you go, who directed that?
Mm.
That's the weird answer I would have said.
I'm right.
Okay, what's mine?
Eight Crazy Nights. It's an Adam Sandler film. An animated Adam Sandler film.
Not the sequel.
Of course it is.
Adam Sandler voices a character called Davy Stone, who is a 33-year-old party animal, of course he is, finds himself in trouble with the law after his wild ways go too far. In keeping with the holiday spirit, the judge gives Davy one last chance of redemption to spend the holiday performing community service as the assistant referee for the Youth Basketball League. Or go to jail. Davy thinks he's gotten off easy until he meets Whitey Duval, the eccentric elf-like head referee. Hilarity ensues. Directed by Rob Schneider, of course.
And the animated Adam Sandler looks exactly like him. And also, this is something else that I will just admit on the podcast, that I didn't just see the film. I also had it on DVD.
Wow.
I mean, I hadn't seen it before I bought it. I was just
You know he picks the shittest films for this game.
That's why when you said it, I was like, fuck.
I feel like that plot still isn't bad enough for an Adam Sandler film, though.
I love the way that there's this like sort of maverick judge going, no, you have to be a referee. And everyone's going, what the fuck?
Did you hear that plot thing?
He drunk
drunk.
Yeah, I did. I wasn't aware he'd done any animation.
course, if he's going to do an animated film, it's going to be an animated version
of
himself.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, congratulations, Brody.
Thank you so much.
You
Cheers.
Won the first Plots That About of Series 3.
Oh, how exciting.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Wow. That went on for far too long.
Yeah. I'm curious. You were talking about jet lag in the first section, but I'm also curious of your opinions on plane etiquette, because I've recently flown back from America. What is your view on seat tilters? The ones that recline their seat far too much and they're all up in your grill.
I think that's acceptable, because, I mean, if you're in a position where you can put your seat back, sure, that's fine. I think maybe the people that do it the minute they can is a little bit obnoxious. But at the same time, the flights that I mostly do are to Australia, which are those sort of flights that take a fucking day and a half. So I think comfort is a very important thing on those long-term flights. So I think you definitely got to put it up when people are eating, because obviously you're pretty much got it in your lap anyway, don't you? So the person in front of you is like fully reclining when you're trying to eat your shitty beef stew or whatever it is. Especially when you're on those long flights and you do kind of spend, you know, the better part of 2 days just kind of eating this awful stuff. I just feel so wrong when I get off the plane.
And also,
like, I just want some fruit or something.
Yeah.
They don't time what you eat at the right time.
Because everyone's body clock's so different as well, isn't it? So you might get on like a midnight flight and they'll serve you dinner, and then 6 hours later they'll serve you breakfast, and it's just kind of like, just fucking.
And even if they do give you fruit, it doesn't taste like fruit should taste like.
You know when you eat something and you're like, I know this has been frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like grapes sort of thawing out. It's weird.
This is a bit vacuous, but on our changeover from South Africa, we went to Dubai and Alice bought some really strong painkillers that were so strong that we had an hour to wait for our flight, and then I woke up 15 minutes before, because they, in that place, they have like reclined airport chairs so you can sleep. So we woke up and we were like, fuck, we've got to get onto the airplane. But what was good about that is, because we'd actually taken probably way too much of the sleeping stuff, the man was like, oh, we're serving breakfast now, and we were like, fuck off. Like, literally, we didn't have anything. And then when we got back to England, we were like, oh, awesome. We'll just have, like, it's so much better to miss it than to be part of it.
I think on long-term flights, I keep saying long-term, long-distance flights, they
sound like a commitment.
Yeah, exactly. Long-term flights.
I mean, they are long-term.
You do
exactly
actually,
what they are.
It's, my commitment issues flare up. they do. They actually feed you so often that it's almost like you don't really get that chance to actually fancy food again.
Yeah.
It just kind of comes around. But one time, because I always get the aisle seat, and because I get uploads on these long-term flights, and one time I got decked in the back of the head by the trolley.
Oh,
and
no.
It's a mixture of just being like outraged, because obviously you're like, that is
awful,
but also just being like, that is so my fault, because I literally have half my head hanging out.
See, that's what I do. I take the aisle seat because I need to get up, because my legs go numb, so I need to go for a walk.
Or is your Achilles playing up?
Yeah, and also
dodgy Achilles.
You might get
DVT.
Deep vein
thrombosis.
Yeah.
I bet you.
Do you wear those socks?
Flight
I
socks.
Wear sexy flight socks, and I did Google all the DVT
symptoms.
Did you
wear them every time? I did have to wear them once.
Yeah.
Did you?
When I went to Thailand, because my mum's got it. It's our
if
Irish
it's hereditary,
bodies.
You
got
to be super careful.
Mm. So basically, I didn't really mind, but we were on a... bus back to Bangkok. This is horrible. But we were on a bus back to Bangkok to get our flight from the next day. And I didn't get... They said, oh, everyone step outside and have a walk. But by that point of the trip, I was just knackered. And I was like, fuck it. So I was on this bus for like 12 hours. Mm. And then when we got to Bangkok, I couldn't stand. And I was with two of my friends, and they were like, what are you doing? Like, get off the bus. And I was like, I can't get up. So they had to carry me off this bus. Like, the only thing I can think of was, like, you know when, like, an Irishman's drunk and people have to, like, physically move him? Like, so they had to do that. And whilst they were carrying me off, someone stole my friend's iPod. Because it was, that's how long ago it was. People had iPods. And then he made me...
go to the bus stop, well, we went back to the bus place the next day and they were like, fuck off, mate. And then, imagine in Thailand, it was like, yeah, it doesn't work the same here. Yeah. So then we had to go to the police station. I remember I promised to go with him because it was basically my fault because my feet didn't work. And well, I was watching, we were in, the first thing that happened, which I thought was hilarious, but you can't really, it is one of those had to be there thing. My friend thought that there was like glass in front of it. The policeman was like, hey, come through at the police station. And my friend thought there was like glass, and then he just did that weird thing where he sort of mock stepped through it and realised there was no glass there, which I found hilarious. But they had also a most wanted board. Nice. And the most wanted board was up on the thing, and I was like, fucking hell, the Bangkok most wanted board, I'm going to look at this. And there was one guy who was like right in the middle of the most wanted board. He was obviously like their highest, their biggest catch. And he was like, so he had bleached blonde hair, and he was standing, and he had a really aggressive look on his face, and everything else in the picture was fire. And I was like, fucking what? Hell, this guy is nuts. But I've always remembered his face.
his steely gaze.
I'm like, if I see that guy.
See, like Gary Busey walking away from him. That's crazy, though. Was it real fire? Or did he, like,
yeah, no, just fire around this guy. Like,
that's <amazing.
laughs> like, really grainy photo of his CCTV image.
When was that?
That was 2000... Well, it was before... So, I first went to Edinburgh for So You Think You're Funny in 2012. So, it would have been probably 2008, 2007. Something like that. He's dead now.
Yeah. They've got him. Mm. Fire got him.
Yeah.
The thing that weird that happened to me on the flight as well was I can't sleep at all on planes. I force myself. But I thought I'll listen to some music to like help me drift off. So I put on Fleetwood Mac Rumours. Great album.
Yeah, but not an album to
you're
sleep.
You're literally
to,
like a 45-year-old lady.
What's wrong with that album to go to sleep?
You've got my vote with that, yeah. I think it's too good of an album to be like, I'm just going to nod off to this.
Well, strap in, because this is the thing that...
Well,
fuck
strap
with my
in, because I fell asleep.
It fucked with my head quite a lot, because it confused me how long I'd actually been asleep, because I didn't realise...
Did you think you'd aged 30 years?
Basically. I didn't realise...
Loving you isn't the right thing to
that
do.
Is a real long-term flight.
It was basically the deluxe edition.
You can
edition.
Go your own way. 60. I just love the fact that he's on. Sorry, guys.
What's wrong with that?
It's nice. It's like a warm bath, but that's what I love about it. The
I
fact
wanted something upbeat and nice to go to sleep to. No?
Just get some sleeping pills.
But I didn't have any. Just
at least put on some like Joni Mitchell or something to fall asleep.
I love the way that if he was lying about this, he'd be like, yeah, so I just threw on some AC/DC.
It's really soothing.
Had a beef jerky and then drifted off.
They didn't have any Run DMC, so
yeah. Nothing like that. I agree, it's a fantastic album, but I'd not put it on to fall asleep.
It confused me because basically it was a 65 track deluxe edition, so it gets confused me how long I've been asleep because
65 tracks.
It was basically like it was really fucking my head because it was all these demo tapes of songs with like different lyrics and instrumental versions, so I'd wake up and thought I'd just like broken Rumours because it'd just be like an instrumental version of Go Your Own Way. I was like just waiting for the lyrics to kick in. I was just tripping because I've had no sleep. But also I didn't realise the next song after Rumours, so I played through the entire 65 tracks asleep, obviously, and when I woke up it was playing Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison, which is intense to wake up to when you're half asleep.
Yeah,
I mean, I would have gone with that to go to sleep in the first
would
place.
You no I think anything down, that's down, got down, decent down. Tempo I couldn't. So I used to work in a bar, which obviously won't name, but a bar in Brighton, and we actually got taught we got told by our boss that if people bring CVs in, you have to mark in the corner at the top before you put it in her office. No. Their aesthetics out of 10.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's that kind of place. So basically, we don't hire someone that's going to be any lower than like an 8 out of 10 physically.
Wow.
Which is awful.
I think there's only one way this can go. So what would me and Alex
Me and Joe have never worked in a bar.
Well, it was weird, because at the same time you were like, you are horrendous, and at the other time you were kind of like, well, I must be fit.
Yeah, exactly.
Been here for 2 years, mate.
That's why me and Joe do podcasts, no one has to see our face.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, that's correct.
But yeah, I think for something as, you know, sort of basic as working in a bar, you know, people are always going to go in to buy booze regardless of if the staff flirt with them or not. Mm. It's just a bonus. But I don't know. It's a funny job to have so many politics within.
Mm.
And I've worked in bars for nearly 9 years, and it's very, very shallow, especially in Brighton.
Yeah, I do, do you know what I quite like though? Is I do like looking at the posts on.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
So basically, the guys in Brighton, they have like a Facebook group, and I've joined it.
Have you?
I have, yeah. So I'm on it because I, and it's happened once before, I think you might remember, where someone we know has been thrown out of a bar, and it's so hilarious someone you know, and then what they've done is they take photos of that person whilst they're being nuts in the bar and go, just kick this dickhead out of the fucking blah 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 rooms, he's a nightmare, threw his drink on the floor, pissed himself, blah blah blah, whatever.
And he's what heading towards home. Yeah, like everyone kind of, you do that out of courtesy to look out for the other bars, but yeah, I remember seeing that too and just being like, oh.
You get a freeze framed picture of someone that you know quite well being very aggressive.
Just with
and
like
going,
a
vein. What the fuck? Like, you know. Yeah. And it's absolutely hilarious. So I'm never going to leave that group now.
No, it's great.
I think there's a very high percentage it's going to happen again.
The best way I've ever seen someone get chucked out of a bar was one of my friends on a stag do. And it is the best way because it kind of diffuses the situation as well. Basically, they tapped him on the shoulder and said, oh, it's quite loud in here. Do you mind if we go outside and just have a chat? And I said, yeah, it's fine. Walk through these clear Perspex doors. And as the door shut behind them, they realised, that's it, the door's shut. You ain't coming back in. And he kind of looked like it's just like a trapped woodlouse just at the window, clawing at the window. And as the night went on, I just kept on looking through that door, and there's just more and more of my friends just in this sort of like pen outside the door.
That's a really passive way to go about it. Was it security or staff?
Security.
Mm. Usually there are. Yeah.
Relish the.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I've worked with some really lovely door staff, but you find like a vast majority of them are really into that kind of like chucking someone out.
That sort of confrontation. Yeah. And do you know what this reminds me of? Joe, do you want to tell how they do it in Yates?
Where are you going with this?
Yates. We don't have to mention any names.
Joe, tell us about when you got chucked out of Yates.
No, so basically there's a Yates, obviously, well, I didn't need to say that, there's a Yates. And let's just say my significant other is about to walk through the door, so I'm going to hurry up, because it's definitely not about me. Someone was there with their friends, and what they did, which I think is fucking brilliant. Do you remember that day when we were talking about this? So what they did is they realised that this group of people were being, I'm not going to say the word hostile, but let's just say egregious.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did is they set off an alarm so everyone had to leave the building. And then they set off the alarm. And then, so they all walked outside. And then someone went, yeah, you're not fucking coming back in here. And then, like, everyone else was let back into the bar, which I think is a really good technique. But Alice was like, we got thrown out of the bar. I don't know what we've done.
Why are you doing your Onslow voice again?
I always do that. I always do it in a sort of Tony Harrison. But, she was like, I couldn't believe it. We were just having a couple of quiet drinks. And I was literally on the phone going, I do not fucking believe a single word you're saying. But, that's a great...
They took away our tears.
Yeah. They threw us down the stairs. That's a good way. Creative. Get creative.
What's the best way you've seen someone get chucked out?
I actually had a fairly physical episode with a guy about 7 or 8 months ago, I'd say. There's a bar that I, the one I've most recently worked in before I became a very famous comedian. And I basically been coming in and out all night, and it's really hard to monitor because this was a slightly smaller bar.
Mm.
And it's very hard to monitor if you don't have door staff, and this particular night we didn't because we were working with a company that just had loads of no-shows. So it was me running the shift, had a radio in my back pocket, you've got a bar that's rammed, loads of people sitting out the front, all that sort of stuff. There's a guy who was a bit of a pain in the ass the whole night, and it turned out he'd had loads of people with him out the front, a couple of whom who didn't have ID. So one of them had come in, and obviously in Brighton, as you know, it's a challenge 25. If you think someone could be 25 or younger, you have to ID them. If you don't, and licensing happened to be sending out, you know, people to do it in a faux kind of way, I can get a $3,000 fine for myself and get the bar a $10,000 fine.
Wow.
So it's, yeah, and this is why, you know, people get aggy when you kind of go, obviously I'm not 18. You're like, cool, but I'm not going to risk getting £3,000 fine, whatever. So, which a lot of people don't know.
A lot of people don't know that.
People come, I mean, if you're a bit pissed and a little bit, you know, aggy or whatever, you come across and kind of go, look, I've got tattoos, I've got a beard, obviously I'm not fucking 18
year old. No, I love the way that we can tell from
exactly
the kind of bars you are working
and the best thing, and it's so, it sounds so simple, but a friend of mine that I used to work with, you know, when you, he's like, I've got the best response for what you can do when someone comes in and they challenge you IDing them, is when they come in and you ID them and they go, I'm 30, you go, can you prove it?
Yeah.
And obviously everyone then goes, I've had this guy who was like giving me loads of stuff. He was like, I run my own business, I do this. I'm like, I don't need your fucking bio, I need your ID. Like, it just you have to be so strict with it. Anyway, had this guy in this particular night, came in, tried to get served at the bar quite late on, didn't have ID. Turns out he had been there drinking all night. So I was like, right, it's my prerogative to get you kicked the fuck out. And obviously you start off in a fairly passive manner. That then goes to passive aggressive when they go to aggressive, and you sort of, it does go from 0 to 100 quite often with a drunk person. And because I didn't have any door staff, I was fairly exasperated anyway. And this was about midnight or say on like a Friday night. And what we had is a dog friendly pub. So we had, you know, those big tall glass jars with the kind of the metal clasp that you clip over, and it's
Yeah.
So one of those on the bar full of dog treats, and I basically said to him, you gotta leave, sort of thing. And if, you know, I've got my radio, if you, I mean, it's such a weird threat, I'll radio some people who'll be here in probably half an hour. So yeah, unless I press the orange button, in which case it'd be about 20 minutes. So basically, yeah, it kind of got a bit heated between me and him. And you find in a lot of ways when you're like a young girl running a bar or running a shift, or you're the one that's in charge, no one takes you seriously. And that's when I just kind of get probably less professional than I should. But because you just get angry having the piss taken out of you.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, he basically, I went to radio security and went to turn my back to do it, and he has picked up this glass jar full of Poundland dog treats and emptied half of it on the bar like that. And I've turned around to just be like, go rage at him basically, and as I've turned around, he's thrown it across the bar like at me.
Fuck.
So it's hit me, and you know when you get red mist?
Yeah.
So I basically just had this like blind rage, and it kind of happened in like a second where he'd done that, he'd thrown it at me, and then I had, without realizing that I'd done it, jumped the bar because he threw it at me and then kind of went, oh fuck, and then went to run outside, knowing that that was obviously an outrageous thing to do.
Yeah.
When you get refused service not having ID. So, but it was so weird because it's something that happens in literally probably 45 seconds, but
before
you look back
mind,
on it and you're like,
even,
you know, it's a kind of crazy thing. So basically, yeah, I've jumped the bar like straight over, not even knowing I could do that. Did a bit of high jump in high school bars, but didn't realise it would come into play there. So I literally hopped the bar, and as he's running outside, I've done the scruff of the neck kind of thing. I've literally thrown him out like head first straight out the door, and he face first on the pavement. And I kind of did that and then went, oh, that's not going to be you that gets in trouble today. Fucking hell, that's going to be me. And then luckily we'd done like the emergency thing on the radio with security. So security, I was about to say their company name, I probably shouldn't, have literally driven up as soon as that's happened.
Oh, okay.
Which was very fortunate for me because he was with like five dudes who saw me do that. And I think it's that weird thing where, like, I'm a fairly kind of lanky person. You don't think you've got any kind of strength. I just had so much adrenaline at being that mugged off.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like... But, I mean, luckily, you know, you go through the protocol where, you know, these people are obviously going to complain. They're going to write in. They're going to phone in the next morning being like, you know, someone was, you know, abused or whatever. Yeah. And then we've got all the CCTV to prove that he did initiate it. So, it got away scot-free, but I did have to have that conversation with my boss and be like, look, I fully did something that I shouldn't have done, but I just got so angry. So that's probably my best chucking out story, because basically then we did have this kind of face-off thing out the front of the bar where he then pushed me and then I pushed him. And
this is after.
Yeah. So when he stood up and then all his friends obviously behind him, and I was a little bit like, I don't know how long I can carry this on. I do not feel like a street fight.
Back up.
Exactly. So the timing of security rolling, it was pretty good. But yeah, luckily it didn't really have too many bad consequences.
It's amazing when that split second... Mm.
You work in a job for so long, and it is a job where you just do cop quite a bit of abuse, and you have to deal with some, you know, really geared up drunk people all the time. You just think, like,
drunk geared people are normally
normally so calm. You do get to a point where you're just kind
of reasonable.
I've had it today, don't fucking mess with me.
Right, that brings us to the plug section of the podcast. Brody, have you got stuff that you would like to plug?
I do indeed. I've got a Brighton Fringe show coming up. It is called Babe. It's at the Warren, and it is the 7th, 8th and 9th of May, and also the 18th of May. And you can get tickets on otherplacebrighton.co.uk, and it's not shit.
Brody is excellent.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Joe, have you got anything you'd like to plug?
Brody, I do. I do have something to plug. I too am doing a show at the Warren for the Brighton Fringe on the 4th and 5th of May and the 29th and 30th of May. But I'm also hosting the late night shows on a Friday night, on Friday the 11th of May, Friday the 18th of May, and Friday the 25th of May. And I think... 2nd of June. So, late night show at the Warren, 11:30 start, Brighton, and then the other fringe dates that I've mentioned.
I am doing a show with Fiona Ridgewell and Graham Card, who are both excellent, and we are at the Duke of Wellington at 8:20, and we are on the 15th, 17th, 20th, 31st of May, and the 1st of June, and it is free. So,
it's a nice room.
It's a lovely room.
It's a lovely room, that, yeah.
So please come along.
We'll see you all of our shows, or else.
Please. That brings us to the end of this episode. I have been Alex Petrovic. Thank you to my co-host, Joe Foster.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jade.
Thanks.
And thank you to our fantastic guest, Brody Snook.
Thank you for having me.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.